So guys, you know what I think we'll do? I think we'll get started. We'll move the approval of the minutes from the last meeting until we have a quorum. And if we don't, we'll have to move that to the next meeting. Savick did indicate that he was coming, and that would give us our quorum. So good afternoon, everybody. I think I know everybody. Lori McKee. I'm the chair of the committee, director of public affairs for Toronto Pearson. We'll just do a quick roll call and get into our agenda for tonight. I think we've got one change to make for the agenda when we get to it. So from the Region of Peel, I have Sabir from Brampton Board of Trade, Badar. Gurpreet Dillon from the City of Brampton is not here. John Davidson sent his regrets from the Region of Halton. Heather Craig Petey was tentative. Stephen Tufts. Hi, Stephen. Councillor Ford, I understand Toronto Council is still going on, so he's not here. Jan Nevis from the Mississauga Board of Trade is here. Aileen Lucy, Toronto Board of Trade's rep, is here. Aileen. Jonathan Wheatley is here on behalf of York Region. And on behalf of Vincent Crisanti, Shima Bada. Where did Shima sit? There, thank you. I mean, technically, Shima, maybe you can be our quorum. How's that work, Ingrid? Is that the way it works? Bring out the mandate. I can't remember whether alternates are. Sorry. Kathy Weiss from the Region of Durham. And I just did take a minute to chat with Kathy with the passing of Roger Anderson on the weekend. It's very sad. I mean, a real icon in the region for so many years. A staunch member of the world. Someone who at the GTA, I got the chance to work with him on a number of files very closely, so he will be missed. Sad. So do it the region as well. I'm sure it's a loss for the whole Durham family. Councillor Parrish from the City of Mississauga is not able to be here. Shane Raymond, he may be joining. He's in court today and just wasn't sure what time it would end. I don't think we hear back from Stephen Rose, their Mississauga resident. Anton Norbert was not able to attend today, and Savick we're still expecting from Seneca College. Our technical members, so Harold from the City of Mississauga. Did Ludwig end up signing in, Ingrid? Canada? Did Ludwig call in? Right, okay. Not yet. And Danette from Brampton, I don't think has arrived yet. Sarah Jarvis is Tourism Toronto and not able to join tonight. Dave from Nav Canada. Dave Parko is the shift manager of the tower, so welcome. This is your first meeting with us. We're happy to have somebody here from Nav Canada, so thanks. Paul Steckham, longtime member, Ministry of Transportation. Massimo Bergami. So Massimo is on the phone. He's the National Airlines Council of Canada. Was hoping to be here, but wasn't able to get out of Ottawa, so he's joined by phone. And Carolyn Polgrabi from Tourism was not able to join today. Did I miss anybody? I don't think so. All right. So we have quorum. We just checked the terms of reference. Shima, would you like to come join us? I don't really think we have, other than approving the minutes, I don't think we have any other votes for tonight. So the agenda was circulated to the committee in advance. We do need to make a change. Massimo was going to be providing us with a presentation this evening, in part given he wasn't able to join us in person, and just the timelines. We have decided to reschedule that to our June 12th meeting. So that's a change to tonight's agenda. And we've got our minutes from the November 29th meeting. So first, can I ask for a motion to approve the agenda as amended? Second, Jan. Any opposed? Okay. As amended. Any comments on the November 29th minutes that were circulated last week? Number of links to materials that were shared. Okay. If I can ask for a motion to approve the November 29th minutes then. Sabir, move. Second by Badar. Any opposed? All right. There were no items arising from the previous minutes. And we do have our committee update that as well was circulated. There is a new version. The version at the back of the room is correct. Was it been passed around to everybody? Okay. All right. Yeah, the chart that was circulated in the soft copy in terms of the noise was an outdated chart, so we've just replaced it with the right one. We've just gone through and finalized our year-end results for 2017, so we finished the year at just over 47 million passengers, which is a 2.8 million passengers more than the prior year. So that's partly the issues we're constantly dealing with, you know, that great problem to have, but it's managing the additional number of people that are flying through this airport every year. Equally significant is the balance sheet improvements in terms of revenue and net income. I think we're now at 113 million net income for last year. We're really pleased to have been awarded the ASQ, so that's the Airport Service Quality Awards, for best large airport in North America. So that's a significant feather in our cap. There's reports in here, I won't go through all the details. We're very busy right now talking to members of the community about six ideas to reduce the impact that aircraft have from a noise perspective. We're out in public consultation. In fact, there's an open house tonight. There were a number that happened prior to March break, and there's a number that are happening now, and we've had what we're calling two Super Saturdays. One has already happened, and one's coming up. So we're getting community feedback on those ideas in advance of making decisions on how to advance with them. I also did want to mention the fact, because it was a significant issue last April, we did a significant rehabilitation of a runway last year that resulted in a fair amount of aircraft using our north-south runway, which had significant impact on passengers and airlines, but also communities to the south of the airport. We do, just like any... Hi, Savik. Come on up. Just like our cities, we have to keep our roads in good state of repair, and so we do have another runway. It's not the same level of construction that's required, but it's a resurfacing. So that will be starting April 23rd. It's being done at night only, so from 10 o'clock at night through to the morning. It does mean that there may be some nights from 10 to midnight where we'll have to use our north-south runway more often than we traditionally do. There's been a lot of communication that's been sent out to make sure that community is not surprised. I think that was the biggest challenge we had last April. We didn't anticipate that operations would flip to the north-south as much as they did, and so people were surprised by the operations, and so we heard about it, and our passengers were impacted as well. So we have had ads in the paper. There's been calls that have been going out, and it's been through CNAC, and what else?
We're targeting advertisements.
Also wanted to give a quick update, and it's something we want to bring to this committee, and we'll probably do it at the June meeting, is an update on where we're at with the Regional Transit Center there. But since we last met, we did retain architectural and engineering firm, HOK, and so they've started to do the design work that's associated with our passenger processing facility that we need to build. And as I think we've talked about before, as a company, we've committed to incorporate the various transit connections to that facility. There's a number of them that circle us, and we are looking to advance the study work on the various lines. The ones that make sense, we'll connect to that facility. So now that we've got the architectural planning team on, we're on track to get that facility up and running probably by the mid-2020s. And so we'll do a more fulsome update to them. We'll see if we can get HOK to come in and give an update. time that they have. And we're growing in terms of our routes and services, and they're listed on the second last page, and then the noise impacts are listed as they always are. Any questions on the regular update? So I think that takes us into our first presentation. So I wanted to introduce, and I probably should have done this at the beginning, we have two of my colleagues here, Pat Gristow. Pat's been at this committee meeting a couple of times in the past, and he heads up our properties strategy group. I'm sorry, Pat, I've forgotten your exact title.
Senior Manager, Property Leasing and Development.
And Peter Humel. Peter is one of our lawyers, and he is acting general counsel as of today. So congratulations, Peter. We're keeping you late on your first day on the job as opposed to going home to celebrate. But we asked Peter and Pat to come because we wanted to share with you some more information about some of the activities around properties, but also how the airport approaches land use for the airport's purposes, how it does in terms of some third-party developments that have happened. There has been some media around discussions we've been having with the City of Mississauga on an agreement. Those are advancing, and so I think the intention is really just to share some information with this committee, given your mandate, so that you have more background on how we operate, given the structure of the airport and what's happened to date. So I don't think we have the light bulb for this one to work, so there's a screen at the back and there's a screen over here. Got it to work? Okay, thanks. And I'm going to turn my mic off.
Okay, thanks, Lori, and good afternoon, everybody. So I'll run through, we have a slide deck here. I'll run through some of the first part of it, and then Pat will go over some of the balance of the slide deck. So the first chart here, I think, speaks to what Lori mentioned about our traffic has been increasing, and last year it increased above 2016, and you can see here we're forecasting an increase to about 85 million by 2037, with other consequential changes to the economic impact that will bring, including the GDP of Ontario and the number of jobs that the airport supports. And on the next slide, that sort of leads into this slide here about the current PILT and tax regime. Right now, the Airport Authority pays a payment in lieu of taxes to the City of Mississauga and the City of Toronto. Because the airport is owned by the federal government, the land is owned by the federal government, the highest level of government authority, obviously, that the lower levels of government, such as province or the municipality, don't have the ability to tax, so they cannot tax a higher level of government. So federal government-owned property, the federal government does not pay real property taxes. So instead, there's this regime about payment in lieu of taxes. PILT is what it's referred to. And the GTA has been paying PILT since we took over the airport here in 1996. The GTA has been a not-for-profit corporation since we began operating the airport in 96. In 2014, there were some changes in the legislative structure of the airport, so we now fall under an act of the federal government called the Canada Not-for-Profit Corporations Act. We're still a not-for-profit entity, but it's just a different legislative structure, and we're still, the GTA still pays PILT to the City of Toronto and City of Mississauga. And the amount of PILT is actually set out, might seem a bit odd, in the Ontario Assessment Act. So it's a provincial act that sets out the amount of PILT that we pay. And that act states that the GTA pays 94 cents per passenger in PILT. And the act also sets out how much goes to Toronto and how much goes to Mississauga. Mississauga gets about 99% of it, and Toronto about 1%, because a small portion of the airport is actually located in the City of Toronto. So this chart shows the amount that of PILT that the GTA paid last year. And you can see as the passenger numbers increase, Mississauga is going to benefit to a greater and greater extent because, as I said, it's 94 cents per passenger. So as the passenger numbers go up, Mississauga will be taking in a lot more money, and so will Toronto will get a smaller share of that, but Toronto will be receiving some benefit of that too. There are the different airports listed there on the slide. The PILT rates are slightly different based on the taxes that those airports were paying, or the amounts that were the amounts of PILT that were paid by those airports when they were transferred, based on an assessment method assessment methodology, determined the PILT then. So that the system was changed, and it was moved into this per passenger rate number. The latest was Billy Bishop was added, and they pay the same amount of PILT as the Billy Bishop being in Toronto Airport, and they pay the same amount of PILT as the GTA does. The PILT is actually that the GTA pays has increased approximately 1.6% per year over that 14-year period. And in some years, it's much greater. In more recent years, it has been increasing much more at a much higher rate because the passenger numbers have been increasing at a much greater rate. So the City of Toronto and or City of Mississauga and Toronto are benefiting from that rapid passenger increase. Now, in addition to the PILT that the GTA pays, we have many tenants here at the airport, hundreds of tenants, where we're leasing office space in the terminals, or it could be hangars on the airfield, retail in the terminals, freight forwarders around the airport. So we have leases with all these entities, and they actually are required to pay, and it's property taxes. So they do pay property taxes based on the with respect to the premises they lease. So how that works is that you've probably all heard of MPAC, the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation, who assesses all property in Ontario, including our own residences and attached houses, condos, whatever. So MPAC also assesses the lease premises that our tenants occupy, and they put a value on that, and then that value translates into an amount of property tax that these tenants pay. So just like any other landowner, tenant in the City of Mississauga, they pay property tax. All of the GTA's tenants pay property tax to City of Mississauga and Toronto, even though the airport is owned by the federal government. So we're paying PILTs, our tenants are paying property taxes, and you can see the amounts there, which is a fairly substantial amount of money. So when you add that to the amount that PILT that the GTA is paying, we're looking at currently it's about $56 million, and it's always increasing as the passenger numbers go up and our PILT increases. Yes, no, I'm not aware that Mississauga has any kind of bylaw or regulation around how the PILT is spent. I do believe they share it with the Region Appeal, however. And I don't know how they split it, but some of the money does go to the Region Appeal.
The actual split is set out in the provincial regulation as well.
And I guess Toronto, it just stays, all of it stays within Toronto. I guess there's no separate split there. But. So that's sort of the money flows that are going to the City of Mississauga and Toronto, and that's every year. So it's quite a substantial amount of money on an annual basis. And then, okay, this chart is about development charges. So now we have PILT paid by the GTAA, property taxes paid by our tenants. And in addition, some years ago, the GTA started requiring that our tenants, when they want to do a major development at the airport, that they would have to pay development charges to the City of Mississauga. So development charges are common in most municipalities. Mississauga certainly charges.
You are the only person in the meeting now.
Oh, this is, oh, that one. Oh, right, okay, sorry. So About DC. So because the airport is, it's federal property, and airports fall under the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government under the Constitution of Canada. So the development charges that the city charges to developers for whatever projects they undertake, that's not applicable here for developments at the airport. So the Ontario Building Code, for example, does not apply at the airport. The Ontario Development Charges Act does not apply at the airport. And so Mississauga is not able to obtain development charges directly for development at the airport. However, there's this process that the federal government has implemented, it's been in effect for a long time, so that the municipality can receive a financial payment that compensates the municipality for the development related or costs related to development at the airport, should the city maybe sustain some costs, incur some costs that might be related to development at the airport for which it cannot charge development charges directly. So there's a process where the municipality can apply, the region, City of Mississauga, and others, they can apply to the federal government for a payment in lieu of development charges. And the city and the region did that, well, it's been 12, 13 years ago. They applied for these payments in lieu of development charges with respect to the airport development that occurred between 1996 and about 2004. We did a lot of development here, building the new Terminal 1, new runways, new taxiways. So the city and the region applied to the federal government. The federal government looks at the application. It's a fairly lengthy, time-consuming process. And the federal government ultimately decided to pay the city of Mississauga and the region appeal amounts you can see there. With respect to the airport's development up to about 2004. And it's always open, and it's possible that the city and the region will make a further application at some point for development that has occurred at the airport subsequent to 2004. So, okay, next. Now, this is the slide which I had jumped ahead to. So this is about third-party development charges. So, as I said, the Mississauga cannot collect development charges from airport development because of the nature of the airport as a federal undertaking. It's federal property. But what the GTA did a few years ago, 10 years ago, I guess, is we went to Mississauga and started talking to them about a process whereby for significant or major developments that third parties wanted to take at the airport, that we would work with Mississauga and make sure that those tenants actually paid the same amount of development charges to Mississauga that any other developer off the airport would pay to Mississauga. So that way Mississauga would receive the benefit of development charges for projects on the airport that it otherwise would not be directly entitled to. So the first project was back in 2008, and it was an Air Canada hangar facility, and subsequently, over the years, there have been a project for a hotel was built at the airport, a car dealership was built at the airport, and some warehouses are being built at the airport. And in all those cases, we've told the tenant, you're going to have to go through and make sure you're going to have to pay Mississauga the development charges that they would have otherwise received if the development had been off the airport. So it's the same rates that Mississauga would charge other developers, and it's the same process. So that way, Mississauga has been able to receive approximately almost $15 million, including what we're anticipating over the next couple of years until 2020 based on airport development. So we have another stream of money coming into Mississauga. And if there was some development on the lands that are in Toronto, Toronto could receive that benefit too, potentially. But the lands that are in the city of Toronto are very small and narrow, so it's unlikely to have significant development there. So overall, we have GTA paying PILT, our tenants paying property taxes, Mississauga and the region have an opportunity to get payment in lieu of development charges that for developments that the GTA undertakes at the airport, and we've got this process where we require our tenants to pay development charges for the work that projects that they're undertaking at the airport. So a steady stream of monies to the city and the region and City of Toronto. Next slide relates to some of the municipal service. So the GTAA pays, and our tenants pay a lot of money in PILT and taxes, as we've talked about. We generally don't receive a lot of services from the city or the region because, for example, the GTA has its own fire department, which is at our expense. We fix and repair our own roads and around the airport, which Lori mentioned. We pay for snow cleaning here at the airport. We pay the usual things for electricity and water. So we don't receive really any municipal services in return for the PILT and the taxes that are paid to the city of Mississauga. And we also, for police, the GTA, Peel Regional Police, is the police force of jurisdiction here at the airport. But again, they're under contract to the GTA. So the GTAA is paying a lot of money every year to have Peel Police here policing at the airport. So that's not picked up by the residents, not a cost on the residents of Mississauga or Peel. So or whether it's fire department or Peel Police or road services and so on, that's all being paid for by the GTA out of its own expenses in addition to the payments of PILT and taxes. Okay, so I think I'll turn it over to Pat to...
So now I'll speak about the revenue components of the airport. So as most of you know, non-aeronautical revenues are a vital component to the sustainability of the airport's bottom line. What this does is it helps keep our airport fees down and also provides revenue diversification. Top non-aeronautical revenue streams for the GTA include retail, car parking, real estate transactions, but mainly our tenants in the terminal provide us with the most amount as well as the parking. The GTA strives to increase its NAR to support continued investment in our airport facilities. However, one of the components that we need to do to achieve that is actually land. So this next slide shows how small of an airport we are from a land perspective versus some of our others. So we're roughly, you know, a little shy of 2,000 hectares, but if you look at some of our competing big airports, you know, they're 3,000, 4,000, and DFW, which is almost 7,000 hectares in property. So what we're trying to do here is just position ourselves from a land component to be more, more strategic and to be able to compete globally with some of our competitors in a global market. So if you look at some of our competing airports, so Schiphol, for example, they've started a non-aeronautical system where they're generating some revenue and they have office space. And they've had 657 square meters of office space. That's 6.5 million square feet roughly. And they've attracted some major, major anchor tenants in that area, Philips, et cetera. They're also opening another 150,000 square foot terminal in 2023. Frankfurt's another airport. They have 140,000 square meters of commercial space, and they're home to KPMG, Lufthansa, and the Hilton brand there. They also have over 1 million square meters of a logistics area to support their airport. Now, Frankfurt, again, they're positioned well. They're not only a passenger airport, but also a very big cargo mover. And as we here at YYZ, we continue to grow, we're starting to get into regions of our area of business where we have a lot of belly capacity. And with belly capacity comes the opportunity to make more money in terms of cargo. So the GTA and what we're trying to do from an acquisitions perspective is we created a subsidiary called Malton Gateway Development Corporation and then Airway Center Inc. And over the last little while, we've acquired several properties, including the International Center and the Airway Corporate Center. Transport Canada staff has reviewed all the transactions in accordance with their ground lease to make sure that we weren't offside and actually consented to the GTA or its subsidiary holding those properties outside of our ground lease. The lands acquired through the subsidiary are not transferred to the Crown. Again, they're held outside. And will continue to fall within the municipal jurisdiction for both planning and taxation. So what that means is basically the entity that owns these assets will treat these assets like any other asset within the City of Toronto or the City of Mississauga where they reside. Any questions?
Where did the company get money to buy the land? You said you acquired land. Where did that money come from?
That's money that's loaned from the GTA. So it's a wholly owned. It's a wholly owned subsidiary, and the GTA funds those acquisitions through loans.
Indirectly?
No. So
that's what it looks like.
But we are already in the property management business. So the Airport Authority already rents out over 2 million square feet of office space and over 1 million square feet of industrial commercial space. So this isn't new to us. We run a very sophisticated real estate group. And if you want to see that, you could walk through the terminal any given day and look at the retail components and how we've changed that aspect of our business to where it was when Transport Canada ran these facilities to what you see today. So we are very much an airport operator, but a byproduct of operating an airport, we are also facility maintainers and operators as well.
Yeah, and just as I mentioned earlier, so we're a huge landlord. I noted, we have hundreds of tenants, whether it's office, retail, on the airfield. So we're already a massive landlord. And what we're doing with the subsidiaries, we're just extending that.
Because I don't want to see a bottle of water go from $2.50 to $3.50 user of the airport facility. So I understand the need to increase revenue and develop different revenue streams. Something that we provide as a service. You know, it's not like we have two airports in the City of Toronto. We have one. And everything is a sole source service we offer here. We've got to be very careful. We don't add these ancillary fees towards the cost of travel. And investments outside the airport authority, which to me is just another way of doing that. And I see that as my view of it. And I understand what other airports do. And what we're trying to do here.
And I think the GTA's position is that what we're trying to do is enhance the customer experience for travelers. And we've done a lot of work to hold fees down for the airlines. And over the last 10 years, I think our airline fees have remained constant. So in real terms, they've declined. So that reduces the cost on airlines. And that should, in theory, reduce the cost of passenger tickets. So we understand all that, and we're taking a lot of efforts to enhance the customer experience and make sure that it's cost effective, and through the examples of our landing fees and how we haven't increased those in years.
And Pat, maybe just go through, I mean, this diversification and increasing of non-aeronautical revenues, that in effect is going to help to reduce the cost or keep the cost of traveling low.
Correct. So any acquisition we would buy would be a standalone business case. We wouldn't look for the airport to subsidize a land acquisition. The land acquisition would have to actually pay back the loan and make money. So ultimately what we're doing is actually putting more money back into the airport to actually lower the fees for everybody. So it's an economic benefit to the airport, and we don't want it to be a hindrance to the operation.
The beer next. Yeah.
So, thank you. It's a great presentation, and I certainly appreciate the additional revenue sources because this is a good economic benefit, as well as from a long-term perspective, you do want to diversify your revenue sources. So certainly, I think it's a great step in the right direction. As far as we want to make sure that we are competing with other world-class airports. I've got two questions. First of all, a question is, at the region of Peel, we are conducting a freight hub study, and we are looking at greenfield development as well as intensification. And we have certainly identified GTAA as one of the major freight hub where we can certainly intensify. And as you have seen in your presentation, that there are many other logistics parks, including in Germany and Netherlands and elsewhere. So we would certainly like to work with GTA in this regard, because we do have an excellent highway network, arterial network, and this would be a good location where we can restrict truck traffic to a certain area because of the freight hub, and we can improve the economic vitality of the region. The second question is that at the region, we are also undertaking a long-range transportation master plan, and we are, as a part of our growth management plan, we are looking at major transit station areas. GTA would be a good place where we are building a regional transit center. So we can take, we can work with GTA as far as the passenger movement is concerned, as well as the freight hub movement.
I think there's probably a really good opportunity with HOK now on board and starting to do some of that work. So there's sort of two pieces to what I think you've asked.
Yes.
One is this regional transit center planning and making sure that as they're doing that work, they're reaching out and engaging with stakeholders like the region to make sure that there's a good understanding of your long-range transportation plan. But then even from a land perspective, you know, keeping in mind this logistics center concept and what other airports have done and where the region's going from a hub perspective, and how does that fit in?
So the question is, have you undertaken a longer-term logistic study for GTAA, or do you have a vision how the airport area will develop in, say, next 50 years, next 70 years?
That's not our group, so there's a strategic land use group that's looking at the airport impact and the airport system holistically, and that's Kim's group. So not from a real estate perspective, but from a land use perspective.
So is there a global benchmark in terms of what the optimal mix between aeronautics revenue source versus the lead source might look like?
Optimal one, but there are, well, other airports, other large airports, I think it's different for each airport. I don't know if I'm the best person to talk about this, but I think some airports, like Hong Kong, might have non-aeronautical revenues being, but being something like 50% or 30 to 50% of their total revenues.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I think we're not sure what number we're at, but we're trying to increase that proportion of non-aeronautical revenues to a higher level that maybe is similar, more similar to an Amsterdam or a Schiphol or.
So I would get used to more expensive water. No, on a serious note, my understanding is that there is competition amongst international airports around actually building the airport as a tourist hub. So I believe Singapore markets itself as one of those airports where people actually go to visit the airport, as odd that as that might sound. Out there already.
That's because Singapore has a butterfly garden and other attractions.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It was very useful. I mean, a ton of comments. I mean, first one is I really wish that Councillor Carolyn Parrish was here today, because I really think she'd have a different interpretation on some of your arguments than were put out here today. And I think in the future, if we could maybe invite Councillor Parrish, because she can't be here today, maybe respond to this presentation and maybe give us another interpretation of what the city of Mississauga feels are some of the differences and how they're missing out with PILT formulas and different things like this. Because I think that would be maybe useful for the city to get here. I'm not an expert in this feeling, but I do know she has some strong feelings about this because she's called me out on some things I've written. As for the expansion of NIR, I mean, everything that I've read and that we're looking at from a worker's perspective is that globally the trend is to have an increase in NIR versus aeronautical. That's across the board. So this really is following that trend. But I guess a couple of things that we've been watching as this GTA has done this, I think, so they've raised some very important points, is first issue is just how aggressive you're going to be in the future. You've given us a couple examples. We've seen the International Conference Center. You mentioned Woodbine. Are there other? Maybe that's been just another rumor. But are you looking at other potential investments that are airport related, but maybe not local to the airport? For example, Downsview is up in the air because of Bombardier's exit from that property. And when that, would there be any synergies there for an investment that the team is looking at? Or is it mostly just around the airport itself?
So we're looking, generally speaking, at our footprint here and Malton. And in terms of how aggressive we'd be, we're being opportunistic. As things come on the market or if we hear that people want to sell, we will look at it. And if it makes, again, if it makes good business sense where we could get the return that we want, then we'll act on it. We're not going to just buy something just to buy it. That's not our business. That's not our core business. Our core business is to operate an airport. And our secondary business is to make sure that we could sustain that airport. So how we do that through NAR.
And then about look at some of the questions raised from our group, Airport Workers Council, is that we see this in part as a privatization by stealth. So you see the airport purchasing a bunch of non-aeronautical revenue streams, whether it be a conference center or other purchases in the future. And we're wondering if that's a way to move into areas that are really not maybe typified by a high-cost labor model or a living wage model. So you're getting into hospitality and different revenue streams as a way of sort of circumventing what is a fairly high union density in the airport itself. And I'm wondering, is that something that you think we should be worried about, or is this something that's going to be happening more and more? Is the part of the non-aeronautical revenue is also about going towards low-cost sectors for expansion? Because that's something that we're sort of keeping an eye on.
In my train of thought. I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah, I think the land strategy is separate from the discussion that you're raising around the business model. I mean, this does nothing to change the business model of the airport.
All right. And so also just for the financial accountability, when you start creating subsidiaries, will all these revenue streams and returns be accounted for in the major reporting of the GTA financial?
Yeah, they're all in the consolidated books of the airport. It has to roll up. So.
Yeah, go ahead, Savik.
Is that where the land that you purchase, is that where the transportation hub is going to
go? I have no idea. HOK has been retained to do the design of where the transportation hub is. That acquisition came well before HOK was. Well, again, that's a misconception because we lease those buildings out, and even if they were owned under the GTA ground lease, they would still be subject to payment of taxes as if they were wholly owned, and because they're rented. So any under the Payment in Lieu of Tax Act, a tenant is seen as fee simple ownership and are assessed taxes directly by the taxing authority. So if it's the City of Mississauga or not, from a subsidiary perspective, it's just. We've asked the Transport Canada if we should hold these outside of the GTA, and they said yes, and that's why we established a subsidiary.
And I think part of that is that part of what Pat is looking for in acquiring real properties, things come on the market, opportunities arise. We don't necessarily know what those lands might be used for down the road. So if we put it in a subsidiary, we may decide down the road that we don't need this land. It's never going to be for the airport. We don't have any plans for it, so we sell it. You know, one of the examples was many years ago with the Novotel that was built over here. We purchased it in a subsidiary because it was simply a short-term purchase to buy the hotel and then lower it because it interfered with the runway use, and then it was sold off. So it was done through a subsidiary rather than the GTA buying it, because if the GTA buys lands directly, and then they transfer them to the federal government. They get added to our ground lease, but then we can't sell off those properties. It's much more complex and difficult. So a subsidiary gives you more flexibility.
Harold, question from the floor.
I'm just curious, if you operate as a subsidiary in the acquisition of these lands, you now are at arm's distance from the not-for-profit status. Does that allow you to compound profit through the subsidiary?
Finance question. So the,
okay.
the subsidiaries are...
I'll leave that out in the ether then.
Good question.
Actually, not mine. It's...
Pardon? My understanding is that the payments made to the state are mostly revenue-based. They're not profit.
That we pay the rent we pay to the government. So we pay, the GTA pays rent based on the definition of under the ground lease airport revenue and whatever. That is a very broad definition of revenue, and we pay percentage rent to the federal government, yes. Large amounts of rent.
Yeah.
Any further questions for Pat or Peter? Thanks, guys.
Good presentation.
All right, so we have a bit of a shorter agenda now that we don't have Massimo's presentation, so we're going to move into the member update. So, Aylin, I'm going to go to you first. Anything from the Toronto Board of Trade to report?
Yes, I have a couple of updates from the Toronto Board of Trade. Please forgive me, I'll be reading from some notes that were kindly shared with me by the Secretariat earlier today. They have quite a lot of activity ongoing. You'll remember at the last quarterly meeting, Natasha presented on the Movement of Goods Initiative of the Board of Trade, so that's continuing. They're currently working on the fifth installation of that report, going to be launched, they're aiming to launch it around June 26th, around the Advanced Manufacturing Summit, which will take place then. Report number five is primarily going to deal with congestion on the 401. I think a previous draft had focused on the 407, and there have been some changes in terms of the data that's being made available to the Board of Trade, so the focus is shifting to the 401. The premise of it will really be on looking at how trucks need to rely on the east-west connections across the region, yet the 401 is one of the top 10 bottlenecks in all of North America. So they'll be looking at some big ideas and proposals for how to potentially resolve that, including looking at connected and autonomous vehicles, which is flavor of the day right now. So that is the Movement of Goods Initiative. They are also looking at a deep dive on some of the policy recommendations to look at off-peak deliveries, which is also stemming from report number four of the Movement of Goods Initiative, which looked at some concrete policy recommendations. So off-peak deliveries will be another focus. The Board of Trade has been planning for the rest of this year and early 2019, so just a couple of things that they wanted you to all be aware of. In October this year, they'll be looking at something that they're calling the top 10 smart projects to get goods moving, which will aim to leverage existing federal and provincial government funding, which is available to help support projects for the movement of goods. In January 2019, they've slated some activity on the impact of new technologies on e-commerce and the movement of goods specifically. And then in kind of the April-June timeframe of 2019, they'll be looking at a cluster-based approach to the movement of goods in the corridor as well. So just a little bit of an overview of some of the activity they have planned for this year and next.
At the Region Appeal, we have been working on our growth management plan, so developing a longer-term strategy for water, wastewater, transportation, as well as financing. Since the Ministry of Transport in Ontario has cancelled GTA West environmental assessment, so we have been working on the growth management plan as well as our long-range transportation plan to do some schedule changes. So we will be taking our report later, at a later date to our council. We have been working on off-peak delivery, as you mentioned, from Toronto Board of Trade. we are a little bit ahead that we are launching a pilot project, a pilot program with several businesses, and we'll be pleased to partner with GTAA as well as Mississauga Board of Trade, Toronto Board of Trade, and other businesses to promote off-peak delivery, not only in Peel, but in GGH area in general. Our regional council has approved Vision Zero, so we are going with a Vision Zero for reducing fatalities on regional as well as local roads. It's a longer-term goal, and certainly we want to see that no fatalities are acceptable to us, so we'll actively work on our Vision Zero strategy. And we are also working on our sustainable transportation strategy, where we have a goal of 50% modal split by year 2041 by sustainable modes. Sustainable modes include transit, walking, cycling, as well as carpooling as well.
All right, so
Brampton Board of Trade.
Brampton Board of Trade. Yeah, so all the political noise aside, it's been exciting stuff going on in the business community side. We are definitely very keen in complementing the broader strategies being adopted by federal government and provincial government in promoting both the super advanced technologies supercluster, advanced manufacturing supercluster, as well as the ICT supercluster. So these days, in between the Board of Trade as well as the economic development team for the city of Brampton, there's ongoing activities in terms of putting some meat around that skeleton, engaging local stakeholders, as well as engaging potentially new participants in that, in both those clusters. So for instance, on the international trade side, yesterday morning we had a meeting with the Ankara IT park, Gazi IT park as they call it. Ankara apparently in Turkey is known for healthcare, ICT, as well as defense sectors. They will be bringing a delegation to town somewhere later on in April. We'll be introducing our ICT players in Brampton and trying to see whether we can sort of partner with them on an ongoing basis. So everybody knows Brampton for its manufacturing prowess, its logistics and warehousing strengths. We're certainly trying to build upon it and trying to build up on our ICT sector and healthcare sector, and again, trying to leverage at the same time the broader strategies that are now being adopted at the provincial and federal level. Other than that, on the international side, the engagement with international markets, both down south as well as internationally, is an ongoing process. So Brampton Board of Trade did join Toronto Board of Trade and other large city chambers in creating a coalition of some 23 chambers around North America to lobby for NAFTA recently. That wasn't the so that's about it.
How was the college?
Okay, hi. Savvy Graham. Okay, sorry for being late. Just a bit of traffic. I could have used one of those fast buses or trains that they want to build here one day to get in here. At Seneca College, we just did a just going to give you a quick update on things there. For the aviation program, we just did a five-year review of the operations safety program, and they always compare it to any other college in the province of Ontario, and there are no comparators because it's the only program like it in the province. And interestingly, in my sixth semester class right now, we got about 50 students, and about 30 of them actually have jobs at the airport right now. So the way our schedule is, they have, you know, a fair enough chunk of time that they can continue to work part-time. So when they come up and they do a co-op job at the airport, or, you know, during that phase of life, a lot of our industry companies will hire them or ask them to stay on. So our enrollment is very strong for the fall, and we will continue to provide entry-level opportunities for young people. And when I sit back here and I look at the growth in 700,000 in 2037, it makes me feel good that if we continue to do things right and exceed our expectations in terms of quality of the program, I think there'll be a good pipeline of young people to join in and help out the key managers and that have the skills that are needed. So other than that, it's just been a seems like a long year. All right.
Thank you. I'm going to share with you some of the growth that's been happening in my area. Oh, thank you. Because we've had some good investments coming through in the last month or two. The first ones, I'm sure you're all aware of the Seaton Lands in Pickering. That's right at the 407 when they built it. It opened up 800 acres of employment lands abutting that Highway 7. So they released, they meaning the province, that's owned by the province in partnership with the region and the city of Pickering. And so they out of the 800 acres, they were able to release 200, which was released about 9 months ago, well, maybe a year ago, and we're down to 60 acres left. So there's going to be some announcements there. So that's fantastic. And this is all prestige employment. So things are going to start looking good for Durham region. And we just landed the Toyota's Canadian distribution facility. And that's going to be 300 jobs. And we just announced today, we just landed Gordon Food Services, selected Ajax to build a 330,000 square foot facility. They aren't formally announcing how many jobs, but in the initial discussions, it was 200 plus. So that's great. And one more is just all happening is a company from Germany, a food processing technology innovative company, is chosen Durham for their location. Lots of great things to announce to council in the next few months. Yeah, it's
great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anything on behalf of Councillor Crisanti?
For the Santa Claus Parade, we had our first ever Santa Claus Parade in North Etobicoke in December the 3rd, and it was a very, very good success, you know, especially with the GTA on our side. We were able to get a lot of floats up. We were able to get a lot of people to partner and sponsor the event, and we had many, many community members who showed up and cheered everybody on, and it was a great success, so thank you to the GTA. And a recent update was City of Toronto just purchased the Thistletown Community Center in North Etobicoke. So it was an abandoned school. We just purchased it, and it's converted into a community center. So it is one of our third community centers in Ward 1, North Etobicoke, and it's just been picked by the Toronto Raptors to get a completely new revamped gym for the community, and we're excited about that.
Anytime Santa comes to town is a good thing.
I know. It was great.
Jonathan.
Thank you. Just one update. Since our last meeting, we had the official opening of the subway in Vaughan. That was pretty exciting. Big news. And, of course, it wasn't just your region doing it. It was a collaboration with multiple partners. So that was exciting for us. And looking forward to lots more development in
The TAWC has been active on a number of files. We had one demonstration a couple of weeks ago with the CBSA workers, which are represented by the PSAC. These are your security border agents who have been without a contract for 4 years or working on the same expired contract for 4 years. So they are ramping up their antagonism, I guess, with the federal government, not the GTAA, over that issue. So hopefully that will get resolved. We're also trying to bring that issue up. We are going to organize another family-friendly May Day celebration at Terminal 1, and that'll be happening on May 1st. Other issues that the TAWC is trying to get involved in, we did send a letter to the submission for the review of the Canada Labor Code, asking for a seat at the table when that review unfolds. And we are have been given some unofficial word that we will have some input when that review. That review was actually sprung on people quite quickly, sort of following up, I think, on some of the success that Kathleen Wynne had when she reviewed the Ontario Labor Code politically. So they want to see if they can parlay that into something positive. We are also working with the workforce study that Eileen is here heading up, and we've had some input and a couple of meetings on that. The TAWC is really excited to see what will come out of that study when it's going to take a while to get it tendered and get the research finished. But knowing who we are and the demographics of the workforce, I think is going to be quite important for the community going forward. We are also supportive of the Rivals Duty Free, which I think is in the community update as well. You mentioned it. We've gone a little bit further. We've written to a couple of folks, ministers, and provincially and federally, asking them to consider letting the LCBO onto the airport, initially perhaps off-terminal, perhaps at some point in the future in-terminal, because we think that it's a unionized workplace and it's a something for Ontario that can showcase what is really a pretty remarkable retail giant, to put it lightly. So we're hoping that the airport will be supportive of that as things move forward. And lastly, I'm representing TAWC on the Eglinton East Extension Community Consultation Group, which is a very interesting part of the process as the extension of the Eglinton LRT goes from Mount Dennis up to Renforth and then, however, to the airport, because we're not quite sure how that works yet. But it's a very interesting group. I've raised some concerns. It's very obvious to me that it's probably going to play out politically. It's nothing more than a repeat of what we've seen in Scarborough with subways. The local residents there are quite, I think, a lot of ratepayers associations are the ones that represent that community on this board, and they're quite concerned about the disruption if the LRT is extended through the community at grade. They are sort of wanting a below-grade solution or perhaps even above-grade. However, the data is really hard to justify subway building in those communities. The densification just isn't there. And when they did that, if they do go with subways, they'll inevitably have to reduce the number of stops dramatically. They've already done that in the current plans. So the TAWC has informally decided at this point that we are simply going to endorse the position of the ATU, which is the Amalgamated Transit Workers Union. They put about a report in 2014 called Toronto Move. In that report, they state, I have 67 recommendations, but hidden in those recommendations, they support the extension of LRT, Eglinton West to Renforth. That's one of their recommendations. They also support evidentiary and close review of any arguments to build subways instead of surface rail with that are more accessible with more stops. So that's one of the issues that will be a little bit more vociferous on, I think, as things unfold. But as saying now, I don't think it's good for the airport, nor is it good for the community to bury that extension, even though I think a lot of residents, especially ratepayers and homeowners, are going to be quite wary of surface rail going through their communities as they have been in Scarborough.
Very much. We appreciate that Arrivals Duty Free support. Thank you for that. We also have had support from Mississauga, Brampton, and Toronto Boards of Trade. The letter that has been written to the province, is that something that we can circulate?
I'll see, but I think it was just an informal to both ministers, asking them to support of it and ask them to consult with the LCBO. I don't know. I think it's been sent.
All right, if you can, that'd be great. Jan.
Been traveling the last month, but so I've had to quickly come up to speed quickly. But which is really interesting, I got some report coming in from across Canada, from all the boards of directors across Canada yesterday, and it matches really closely. This is what I found: the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, the economic report, they put out 10 ways to build Canada that wins. They've seen with the Ontario Chamber of Commerce a declining confidence. Not confident in business in 2018, which was really interesting. From across Canada, they also had exactly 80% of companies across Canada are not confident in the business in 2018 across Canada. Yet, there's 52% that are confident in the Canadian economy. 43% across Canada, so this is senior executives, board members across Canada, corporations, the global economy, 43%. The economic sector, 43% will improve. Geopolitical stability globally, 95% said it will worsen. That's just release of this yesterday. Okay, so on to something else more. NAFTA. How confident are you that Canada can successfully renegotiate NAFTA? 52%. 45%, and some, they weren't really sure. 45% no, 52% said yes. And how confident are you that Canadian international trade can thrive outside of NAFTA? 76% said yes. Yes. Okay, with our trade deals, Canada's trade deals, from outside, not with the U.S. So that's a really good point. They're also saying, they anticipate 250,000 more jobs in Peel over the next 3 years. A more educated workplace is going to continue with our colleges. The OCC also released phase two of the Vote Prosperity campaign ahead of the June 7th provincial election. Four pillars to building an economy in Ontario. So they're looking at strengthening, the pillars are strengthening business competitiveness, fostering job creation, building healthy economy. So those are some of the key things. The Trans-Canada, the Canadian Trans-Pacific Partnership has been published for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, representing 495 million people with a combined domestic products of bringing in 13.5 trillion Canadian dollars. 13.5% of global GDP. And it was signed on March 8th. And the Canadian TPP will have Canada access 1 billion new customers and consumers in the world market because of fast-growing markets in Canada and around the world. And it covers 11 jurisdictions. I've got it for MBOT, too. This is from MBOT. I've pulled it from several locations. But I've got that on the MBOT website. The MBOT has partnered with the Chinese Business Association. They had a meeting with 11 Chinese dignitaries regarding business opportunities between Canada and China. So that was just recently. So for potential, lining up potential partners. There's a new second location of BDC that's been set up in Mississauga on Argentinian Road as well. And NAFTA, there's still, it's ongoing, but it's good. But my time when I was in the U.S., a lot of the U.S. Business people are very nervous. They think there's going to be layoffs, because of a lot of layoffs in the U.S. of NAFTA, and they also are concerned about stocks falling in the markets. So there's a lot of jitters in the U.S., which is very interesting.
You can chime in on this as well. Has Mississauga Board of Trade or Toronto Board of Trade actually surveyed the local manufacturers and exporters and what they think will happen? The local manufacturers and exporters, and what they think will happen if NAFTA was scrapped. I hear that, you know, somebody said 6%. That's not what I'm hearing in Brampton for our local manufacturers and exporters. They are saying that if NAFTA gets scrapped, we're going to take a major hit in our exports into it. The reality is that all of our assembly lines they're built to supply into United States, to retrofit them to sell into Europe or anywhere else in Asia would be a massive overtaking. It's not going to happen overnight. But having said that, you know, I'm in the camp who doesn't think that NAFTA will get scrapped, so.
Well, it seemed to be thawing a little bit in the last reports in terms of how negotiations are going. It wasn't as much.
Sorry, I should rephrase. I'm in the camp who believes that even if NAFTA gets scrapped, so if NAFTA gets spread, Trump is going to pull a Brexit on you. They want it out of Europe, but then they want free trade agreements with all the rich European countries. That's exactly what's going to happen. So if he scraps NAFTA, he will be talking to Canada on a regular basis about doing a free trade agreement just with us. And I don't know, so now that we have signed TPP, and now that we have CETA, I don't know how that negotiation will look like, because obviously any future negotiations with Trump administration will also have to comply with our new free trade agreements with other partners.
Trump got it mixed up, too. That was pretty funny in the U.S., too. Anderson Cooper really nailed that one and says it was pro-Canada because he was saying we were in a they were in a deficit and they weren't.
Right. Right. Aileen, you have a comment?
Maybe just to add just a few things. Firstly, on the CPTPP that you mentioned, there's a lot of information available on it on the Global Affairs website as well, in case you want to use that as a source for the Global Affairs website.
Yes.
So the Comprehensive Partnership for Trans-Pacific Trade. On NAFTA, I'm not aware of a specific survey that the Toronto Board of Trade have done. However, there are a number of organizations, including the Canadian Manufacturers and Exporters Association, as well as the American Chamber of Commerce in Ottawa, who are surveying their membership. I also believe that the Toronto Board of Trade might be one of the stakeholders that is engaged in the Global Affairs NAFTA roundtable. So after each round, approximately 1 week after each negotiating round, Global Affairs hosts what's usually a conference call where they provide updates to stakeholders. So there's been a lot of engagement on that front. But I can check back with the Secretariat folks to see if they've actually surveyed members. I would just say, as somebody who in my day job engages a lot in the NAFTA process, stakeholders in the Canadian business community have been proactively providing a lot of information on supply chains that are inherently North American, on composite supply chains, on trade and value-added services, on the value of services trade as opposed to trade in goods, particularly when dealing with a U.S. administration that focuses on a trade deficit that only looks at goods figures and has tended to ignore the value of services. So there's a lot of activity. There is a lot of noise coming from the Canadian stakeholder community to defend Canada's interests in these negotiations. And just one very quick note on how negotiations are going, based on conversations that I have had and what I've heard, is that we are still facing it's a bit of a parallel negotiation. So you have one track, which is the working level negotiators that are meeting and that are in the weeds. And then there is the other track, which is extremely political, highly unpredictable, to the point that it can be quite frustrating for stakeholders who are planning for business risk and business continuity. But I have also been hearing over the last month that on the Canadian and on the Mexican side, they do believe more and more that the United States is looking for a deal. How profound and detailed that deal will be is yet to be seen, but there does seem to be an understanding that USTR is looking for an agreement fairly swiftly, in weeks is what they're being told, but it will remain unpredictable, I think, until the very end.
Thank you. All right, to our technical members, Paul, anything from the province of Ontario to report?
Tomorrow.
That's a small thing.
May 9th, election June
7th. This consultative committee June 12th. We'll know by then. We did have a chance since our last meeting, we had two representatives from the province who were interested in understanding more about some of the flow challenges we have in the terminal because of staffing restrictions and CATSA, et cetera. And so the Deputy Minister of Economic Development, whose name is... Oh, dear. I'm having a middle-aged moment. Yeah. Yeah. I'll come back to it. Anyways, gave him a great tour, and part of the issue was they're saying, you know, and I received a call saying it's really frustrating when Ontario is looking to bring businesses in who are interested. No, he was minister. Interested in making investments in Ontario to only get sort of slowed down in lineups at Canada Customs. And Inger's going to whisper in my ear. Ah, yes. Gerson. Yes. And so wanted to say, look, we're happy to show you some of the challenges we have, and we'd love you to lend your voice of support when we're talking to the federal government about the need to keep up with the passenger flows. Turned around that, and we do have a couple of ways that we can help to make sure when Ontario or others are bringing in potential investors that it's like, we know you're coming, and help to greet them in ways that is helpful as a partner. So we had that conversation as well.
Can you hear me?
No, press it till it flashes green.
Just one other thing I wanted to say that I've heard from a number of people in my travels and even before I went, and I've experienced it personally as well, is Air Canada delays flights, and then they cancel flights, and they say, we have technical problems. We need a part of a plane, but the planes aren't showing up. And this is not just Toronto, but this is other airports in Canada, and business people are getting really ticked off, and they said that we're not going to fly Air Canada again. And the thing is people are, there's business interruptions, so people are not getting to their conferences or business meetings. There's people not getting to meetings on time or connecting flights for business. People are stranded or trying to get into hotels or scrambling because they have 11:15 flight, and then it's postponed to 2, and then it's not until after 2:30 that Air Canada tells them, oh, by the way, it's canceled. It was going to be 7 o'clock that night, and it's canceled to the next day, and they don't even know if they can get on a flight. And the impact of their travel plans, even people personally, onto cruises or other connecting flights, and they're not happy. So, and also, there's been no snowstorm, there's been no high winds, there's been no rainstorms, it's sunshine, and Air Canada isn't taking off. And they're saying, they keep saying this same, well, I'm hearing this from everybody, technical problems, so I don't know.
I will defend Air Canada.
Oh, okay,
here.
Okay. But they have a lot of flights.
I don't think anyone wants to get on a plane that's not safe to fly.
Yeah.
Right? So I think in terms of safety issues.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know people's time is expensive and plans, but it's frustrating and all that, but I think the core of our business is safety, and so I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Anyway, they made a lot of money last year, and people are starting to see through that because they think they're over-marketing, overselling, and under-delivering. It's not always
technical issues.
But that's what the business community and people are thinking.
The plane should not fly.
Yeah.
But, a lot of their domestic flying or business flying is pushed to other subsidiary carriers. Takes the brunt of everything. The issue has got to be down the line in terms of the carriers. But again, you get the good stories and the bad stories. You got to be very careful what you want to listen.
Bad ones always
come to the forefront. I could tell you 2 or 3, but it wouldn't be.
I was seeing all the Twitter feeds.
You travel too much.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Anyway, it wasn't me. It was from a lot of other people. So,
sincerely.
Well, that's what Massimo was planning to do. So Massimo is the representative of the National Airlines Council of Canada, which represents Air Canada, WestJet, Transat. And so that's what we were hoping to have today, but we'll have another June meeting. So absolutely.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because see, people, if it's not snowing or high winds, they don't buy it. Like, where's this part? And there's no, they're calling people, like, the weather's up in good in Toronto and or down here, and there's no plane here.
Dave, I know it's your first meeting, but any updates to share from Nav Canada? Great, thank you. It's a huge undertaking, so appreciate your support on that. And Danette, I'm sorry we didn't introduce you right at the beginning. I think you have to explain your title, though.
Okay.
Is it flashing green? So Danette Dalton is with the City of Brampton, and her title is Expediter.
I can just yell. I usually am. All right. Now I have three of them. Okay. Yes, my name is Danette Dalton, and I am the expediter with the Economic Development Office at the City of Brampton. So my role is to work between the four, five sectors, I guess, we have. The fifth one I would suggest is our central area. So Anthony Wong is our central area manager. And he's sort of looking at the downtown from all perspectives, so mixed-use environment, commercial, retail, some industry, I suppose, but mostly what we're looking to attract in the downtown now is office space. But then we have our four other sectors as well, food and beverage, health and life sciences, advanced manufacturing, and technology as well. So we're doing a lot of different things right now to sort of make everybody aware of the sectors that we're anxious to attract to the city. Right now we're also working with world-renowned urban planner Larry Beasley, who is helping us to develop a planning vision. And the exciting part of that is a year's worth of work is finally coming together, and there should be a presentation to council and the public on May the 7th. I believe it's a 7 p.m. presentation. And that vision will be something that we'll be looking for council to endorse. And there will be a lot of work that will come from the presentation of that vision thereafter. So a lot of implementation, so to speak. And we are also developing our economic development master plan right now, as well as the cultural master plan. And we're looking to sync all three of those documents together and sort of bring them. I don't have dates at this time for the economic development master plan or the culture master plan, but all of this is supposed to be tied in together. And again, sort of my role, going back to the expediter role, is to work between the five different sectors that we have, as well working closely with the planning department to help speed development along, especially where they're bringing in large investment dollars and large amount of jobs to the cities, particularly in those sectors that I've described. But I do help in any way I can, even if it's not high cost investment or something that might bring in a lot of jobs. The expediter service is seen as an incentive or a time incentive, in addition to some of the other incentives that we do offer in the different sectors. And I'm also working on the extension of a community improvement plan for the downtown area to help attract that health and life sciences sector and more office space to the downtown as well. So that's my job in a nutshell, and that's some of the exciting stuff that's going on at the City of Brampton right now. So again, May 7th is the big date, and I don't know if we've done enough in the past to sort of advertise the exciting things that are going on in the City of Brampton, but this certainly is a big one and a big stepping stone into the future-ready City of Brampton. So stay tuned for that, and I'm sure there'll be lots of information on our website and stuff too that people can check out if you can't make the meeting.
Yeah, it'd be great. And maybe you can give us an update in June as well.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
A lot on your plate.
Yeah, yeah. It's a busy time right now in Brampton, that's for sure, but very exciting times. Yeah, it's a huge cultural shift that we're looking at, and it's, for me, it's very exciting, having been in the realm of planning for 15 plus years now. It's exciting to see everybody sort of jump on that bandwagon and embrace the shift. So that's good. Any questions from anybody?
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
And I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Sarah Jarvis, Tourism Toronto.
Oh, Sarah, I'm sorry.
Sarah's a little late. Updates from us. On March 21st, we launched the official Canada-China Year of Tourism. I don't know if anyone in the room attended that event at the Four Seasons Centre.
I was there.
Marathon. we, as I'm sure we all know, the China market is a huge growth opportunity for us, and in 2017... is actually the highest for the first time of all markets, international markets, with visitors to Toronto hitting 319,000. So that's 100% growth in 5 years from that market specifically. We're working with our partner OTT Financial to try and implement payment options for the Chinese visitor with WeChat Pay and Alipay. And now both the CN Tower, the Aquarium, and I think the AGO signed on as well. So there's a number of big attractions and some of our hotel partners who are starting to use that system, which is fantastic. So if anybody here has any questions about that, I'm happy to answer and connect you to the people that you need to talk to. And then we're just preparing for the implementation for the new MAT, the Municipal Accommodation Tax, which takes effect on April 1st in Toronto. And then for short-term accommodations, that's likely going to happen in June. There's still a few things that need to be worked out for that. What that means for us at Tourism Toronto is just that our funding will shift from the GTHA to the City of Toronto. And then it opens up, so that does away with the destination, the DMP, the marketing program. And we are now able to work with hotel partners who were not paying into the DMP before. So it opens up the opportunity to work with a number of new hotels, which is great for us. And that's all I have to
say. Thank you. And actually, one of the opportunities potentially with that year of the China-Canada tourism is that it'd be a good opportunity to introduce something like arrivals duty-free to allow all of those incoming Chinese travelers to purchase their made-in-Ontario, made-in-this-region goods
and services. And great to have WeChat and Alipay for that.
I just have two quick updates. One is with the Toronto Board of Trade. Richard Florida and Howard Ng are speaking at an event on April the 11th. So what we can probably do is circulate the flyer for that event to everybody. And also wanted to just tell you that we have come to this table before with a copy of our draft master plan. It has been received by the federal minister and the land use plan was approved. So the document is going through its sort of final reviews and it has to be translated, but then it'll be posted in final form on our website. So it's good to get that one through. This was a year of work and undertaking to get that done. So that's all signed up. So our next meeting is June the 12th. We know we're going to have Massimo on the agenda. There's a couple of ideas that I talked to a couple folks about in terms of other agenda items. Also, we talked about getting potentially HOK to come in and talk about the regional transit center. Any other ideas for next or future committee?
Start. One question. At Peel, we do have an all-party platform. Some of the things that we would like to see, whichever party comes into power, but that's a good way of reaching out to all parties.
Yeah.
So my question is, do you have same kind of all-party platform that you reach out to all parties from a GTA perspective? Some of the things that you would like to see, say, from passengers, from goods movement or from other initiatives?
I think the closest thing you would see would be the submissions we made around budget. So we did make a submission to the standing committee, a pre-budget submission. I think that was circulated to this group. No? Okay, well, we can easily do that.
We'll see.
Yeah, so we do federal and provincial budget submissions, so that sort of wraps up. I mean, those are the funding kind of issues, but that tends to wrap up the issues that we're working on.
I know we've talked about it on the committee that, you know, it's one way to get a GO train or a ride to us to the airport, but you still have to get to some of the inner facilities. And you know, one of the thoughts that I have about is some type of a hop on, hop off service that the GTW provides. And, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking, like,
yep.
if you're in the GO bus,
Yeah,
right, so
yeah.
I, it is an interim plan, long-term plan. So I think something to do with transportation would be something to add, because I think it's good to keep it in the perspective of servicing the community and the people that we serve. Right?
There's two things there. One is absolutely, I mean, one of the reasons why a hub that we've been talking about is more challenging, and when Metrolinx looks at it, they think, you know, it's not like downtown Toronto where all the jobs are really tight together. I mean, there's a lot of the airport terminals, but then even airport jobs, they're around, and then this employment zone with so many people working in and around, you know, you get to a hub, but then you still got to get to where you work.
That's right.
And so those last mile connections are all important, and whether it's a hop on, hop off, whether it's some sort of you know, traditional transit service, or there's lots of new Uber-style transportation network company-style options that could be looked at. So that it's got to be part of that solution. So well, you're right.
Yeah. Well, I think Kathleen's giving away a lot of money right now, so I think there's no reason why you can't go and ask, right? I know it's not. I know it's
I'll give her money. A call tonight.
Yeah. Everything's in the billions, so you should be able to get something.
We also aren't forgetting about, you know, the transportation center that we're talking about has some, like, higher order transit connections, the LRTs and potentially high-speed rail and GO. But there's also buses, right? There's significant bus services that today provide service to the airport, but we've been doing some work to say, you know, are there ways that you can start to grow the hub, if you will, by looking at the frequency, look at the underserved communities. Some work that we had done showed that there's sort of three communities that are underserved from a bus perspective, and it's Mississauga, Brampton, and Vaughan were the three ones that kind of popped up. And so in a shorter term, because, you know, LRTs and those other higher order transit, they'll take longer, but what are the things you can do in a shorter term, in more of a, you know, 1 to 5 year period, to start to build more easy connections for people to get here, but also to get, you know, through the region and it's part of where it is so congested.
People fly in, and for the Apple shareholders meeting we went to 2 years ago, they paid 10 buses every 10 minutes, but it was only for the shareholder meeting. But after that, it wasn't every 10 minutes. So what they do is they move buses to, like, they put on more buses to get people from the airport right to the location, which is really, they've had to do that, I guess. And so people don't always want to take Uber, right? So, but they had all the shuttles of people waiting and then people directing them right on to the bus. So, I mean, that's being flexible with your transit. So, you know, just innovative, right? You don't always have to have that set route. You can have some set routes, but then have buses available for conferences and or major things that are going on where you're shuffling a lot of people.
Any other ideas for a future meeting? All right, hearing none. A motion to adjourn? Bedar, seconded by Kathy. Any opposed? Great. Thanks for coming out, everybody. Nice to see you.
Thank you.